I don't know how to play, and I don't want to anyway. Need to delete this game and go back to another save. But my hard drive sparked zero charisma, zero luck. I don't have any skills or the XP to fix my.
Hello and welcome to the National Institute for Gamer Review. I am DK.
I'm Lewis, and we are broadcasting from Free Rostov on the Don, the new Republic.
The Günter Fehlinger Republic of Rostov, yes. Yes. Hashtag so, ex-Russia.
Yeah, also the... I just want to point out how on he is, that he recognized this republic 4 hours after it theoretically might have existed. Like,
you know, like, he was ready.
Yeah. The time to recognition ratio was 4 hours. I'm kind of impressed, like, that he's that.
I think it just highlights the extent to which this is a Western intelligence gay op.
I don't know. That's the thing we're gonna discuss is they're probably the biggest thing involved. But first, you're gonna like kind of lay out what happened for maybe those in Rio Rhinelander.
Yeah, so Mrs. DK,
because the actual timeline is somewhat confusing.
Yeah. It was Mrs. DK doesn't care too much about the details of the war, but was asking questions about. I think it was enough of a news story and enough of a head scratcher that if you weren't kind of watching it unfold in the less than 18 hours or something that it took to unfold, it's maybe hard to piece together. So, so basically, news broke. Well, I guess I'd have to look up the exact, you know, because it would also depend on the time zones, like when in the day, because I do think that kind of matters to some extent. Because it was something that happened so quickly. I guess it would have been late afternoon, early evening, Russia time, something like that. That Evgeny Prigozhin, who is the CEO of Wagner, but not a founder, had been somehow become CEO because he had a fortune through quote unquote catering. All this history is pretty murky, but there's clearly some kind of organized crime connection. In any case, Evgeny Prigozhin claims that he was attacked, that Wagner was attacked. I don't recall. Do you remember the specific? Mike said something about like 2000. I think I might have heard a claim like that. I don't know what he... I didn't watch... I didn't pay too close attention to what Prigozhin was saying because I just kind of dismissed it, as I think a lot of people did. At first, do you remember how many people he said specifically died?
I remember the phrase 2000, but the whole thing was pretty quickly jumped on by like what you would call like pro-Ukrainian propaganda. Yeah. So they were saying things like, "Oh, Russian army units are defecting to this guy." Like, it got pushed into the Ukrainian, and I mean by that like the NATO propaganda mill. Pretty quickly, so yeah,
which
it's very hard.
If they didn't have something pre-made, I don't necessarily think they knew like the hour, but a confluence of factors indicate to me that, well, whatever, we'll get there. I smell Western intelligence. Anyway. Yeah, so some unspecified, let's say, number of Wagner are claimed to be dead. Non-zero positive integer, right? Claimed to be dead as a result of a Russian Ministry of Defense regular armed forces missile and or bomber attack on Wagner positions, on Wagner troops and you know... So Prigozhin says they're going to, they're not, this is the last straw, and Gerasimov and Shoigu have to go. And in order to demonstrate their intent to make sure that these two miscreants are gone, they're going to do a, quote, march of justice, which was the phrase.
Well, the march was the walk back. It was first is we're going to go to the Kremlin and hang Shoigu.
Was that, the initial claim
was like, we're going to,
we're going, like, to hang them, like execute, like the execute explicitly. That was the intent.
I believe it was like Ragnar is in, like, the phrasing is kind of hard to find, and translations are all kind of.
I don't speak fuzzy. Russian, so it's like I would need.
But the original that I could really rely was on, you know? Like, we're going to depose or get rid of. Like, the first thing was like, we're going to get rid of this guy. Like, the first claim was more wild, and then it was walked back to this march on thing.
I do remember that the march of justice was something of a walk back. I don't remember what the initial statement was, but yeah, definitely it was. You're right. Yes, now that you're saying that, I do recall that wasn't the first turn of phrase to describe what specifically they were doing. So they cross the Russian border, and we don't find out until later, but they actually kill, well, at least, I mean, again, it's actually kind of hard, and I don't know if this has been confirmed by the Ministry of Defense, but it came out later on Russian Telegram that two Russian border guards, like, you know, uniformed border guards, were killed by Wagner during that process. But we didn't know that until basically the whole thing was already over. As it was unfolding at the time, the impression one had, like, during the, it was like a very weird, like, 6-hour period. Yeah.
So in this initial period, like, before they got to Rostov on Don, it seemed like it was like totally, oh, this is all fake. Like, Prigozhin has made a blustery statement about, oh, I'm going to hang Shoigu, blah, blah, blah. Oh,
right.
He's doing one of those things he does. He's cutting a promo, as Mike says.
Increasingly erratic and insane talking points, and I actually had kind of tuned him out because
he was also doing insane actions too. Remember he was going, he was geolocated within a, like, 800 meters of the front line at Bakhmut.
Do remember that. Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, like, he climbed in the back of an Su-25. He was doing crazy shit, and he was saying, he was flattering my biases. He was saying things that the militarist faction in the Russian government, which maybe is a good chance, like, so, like, to blow out to, you know, the, like, a 30,000 foot view for a second, the backdrop to a lot of this is the fact that the Russian intelligence services and the Russian armed military services have not liked each other, dating back to, like, the days of the Tsar, because the Tsar had a very feared intelligence service, and he had a very powerful army, and they didn't really necessarily like each other very much. And the KGB didn't really like the Russian military, and, you know,
the NKVD historically really didn't like the Red Army.
Exactly. Yeah. And they basically murdered Zhukov, right? Like, Zhukov, the military genius who won you the Great Patriotic War, gets fucking exiled internally to his dacha for like a decade or two, and then killed. I think it was supposedly an accident or something, but it was one of these, you know, they offed him, and there's a lot of history of this. So the KGB faction, like, Putin is a KGB guy. He's an intelligence guy, always has been. And so Putin's presidency de facto in terms of internal Russian stuff means that the intelligence service is on top of the military. But from a military minded person, and especially more nationalistic person, kind of a perspective, I'm in this photo. The the way that they were conducting the war from the very start was as a kind of intelligence, as though it were a kind of intelligence operation. We missed the chance to on the BattleTech show to describe what was going on as a refusal war in kind of Mech Warrior BattleTech lore terms, which I think if this is that's just the best way to understand it. And part of that is this kind of this bidding process, this display, this show, right? Like, we're not actually going to have this all-out war unless you commit to it. And that's what ended up happening. And it took, I think, Putin very much by surprise. And more broadly, it took the intelligence services in Russia to some extent by surprise. And there was discussion of that in like leaks from the Jack Tahera leaks and that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's the people who are looking at this war as a war to be fought as wars are fought, rather than as, you know, more in terms of its relationship to intelligence services type stuff. There was a lot of dissatisfaction with the nominal titular, like the Joint Chiefs of Staff equivalent. What were you going to say?
Yeah, and I do kind of want to return a little bit to the events. So it also, like, so what happened is there was this announcement made, this declaration was made that they're going to march on the Capitol, if you will. And then it still seemed like bullshit until Wagner forces actually got to Rostov-on-Don. There was this period where there was footage of on Rostov-on-Don of like all these Russian National Guard guys. Like, it looked like doing urban warfare training, like bounding and like doing actual like drills and like being very relaxed. And it seemed like that actually, which made it seem like, oh, there were just drills and there's like the Ukraine.
It looked like it just, well, the whole thing looked like it. I kept calling it a TV show because I mean, felt,
but the
like
thing
it
is
a TV show.
I think that was an accurate assessment looking back on it now, because the orders that they got were don't engage with Wagner, just kind of be there in Rostov. Like, because an RWA brought this up, whatever, just like have a presence, but not necessarily a hostile one. Just like if we hit, so let's say, was like 10,000 Wagner guys showed up and there were already 10,000 guys just hanging out who work for the Russian MOD and they just don't fight. It kind of takes the wind out of the sails of the whole like coup thing, because that means there's no like coup, right? They're just kind of like hanging out now. Now that's just like a bunch of military guys just kind of chilling. And I think that did in a lot of ways kind of take the air out of the coup. Because they didn't defect, or that's one of the things is they didn't. People say, "Oh, Prigozhin took over Rostov." You know, like it's he controlled the southern military district. He, you know, that was bluster. He was just like also allowed in it with these guys. He didn't.
They physically occupied one building. There was an important, you know, administrative.
Well, they also took some check. They also had some checkpoints, but they didn't take the checkpoints. They just also had their guys by the checkpoints. Like they're Russian army guys.
And they didn't do all the administrative stuff that used to be getting done in that building still got done by the actual legitimate Russian government, just not in that building, or at least not the parts of that building. Because it wasn't even clear if they occupied the whole building. It was said that that's where Prigozhin set up his little personal office. He didn't continue advancing towards Moscow. He stayed in his, what was for like whatever, 12 hours, his office in the military administration building in Rostov. But I'm not aware of anything specifying either way whether or not they even took that whole building. It's not clear.
But hey, from there, it appeared as if Wagner was sending a convoy north to Moscow with Prigozhin in it.
Yes.
And then it's a 12 hour. That was next morning. So that was that morning. Kind of like we all like that morning. Everybody kind of figured, oh wow, they taken, you know, or taken, quote unquote, just arrived at and weren't kicked out of, I guess.
Well, like Rostov, they drove overnight in. They drove over the Russian night.
They began the trip to Moscow, which then just kind of stopped. Like then got halfway well,
that
done.
Was when they, that's when the Russian government started putting up hard physical barriers. Like before that, it was just, you know, a couple civilian trucks that they would lie across the road. And,
yeah.
And they would just smash through them because they could. Then they started
building. Which is also like a bizarre thing to do.
Yeah, it's weird. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, also, they could just bypass that if they really wanted to. Like, yeah. Which also brings to how big this convoy it was is still kind of unclear. Estimates have gone as high as 2,000, but actual convoy footage has been like
maybe
five BMPs and some trucks. So maybe, I don't know. Like, it could have been as low as like, you know, 400 guys, which is one battalion as the Russians figure it. So I don't think it was like just because the narrative from the that this was never a big deal at all thing with it was like just Prigozhin's bodyguard, but he wasn't even there, so it clearly wasn't just his bodyguard. It was some you get into rumor at this point, and then at this point halfway through, and Prigozhin has been negotiating with taking calls and talking to figures the whole time, and eventually at like the halfway point to Russia or to Moscow, they agree to some kind of deal where Prigozhin and Wagner, either old timers or loyalists or guys who want to go back to Africa and like restart, will kind of go to Belarus and be effectively exiled. Wagner guys are also allowed out of their contract, and they just want to like go home and stop being in Wagner. That's an option, or they can sign on to like become some kind of it's been kind of ambiguous if the Wagner guys who signed contracts with the MOD are signing like army contracts, say you're a 18-year-old guy in Russia and you want to join the army. That's a contract you can sign to volunteer, right? That's like, I think it's 2 years money. Wagner money.
I think it's the unit. I don't know what their contracts look like financially.
Like, they're probably getting paid.
Yeah, probably getting paid yes, that's a good point.
Yeah, I doubt they're taking a pay cut.
But as far as, I thought you were asking, or maybe you weren't, I was curious about this, is why I bring it up, the structure, because I saw things going.
Wagner is already run by independent warlords. That makes sense. Wagner is actually.
And it seems like they're transferring in at the unit level, right? It's not like they're breaking up companies or something. So it's interesting to see what that ends up looking like kind of down the road. Cause there's obvious use for essentially expendable special forces. That's kind of what that was their
assault
thing, right?
Assault infantry is from the term, I think, in the
shock army.
War.
Yeah. It's like a Soviet shock army, you know, like it's basically what they were, and they're always going to need that. But obviously they can't. People were talking about, does this just go to show you can't let any mercenary company get this big, or just one run by Jews? I don't know. It's an interesting question.
As a student of history that studied a lot of pre-Jesus Mediterranean, mercenaries are actually great, and there's nothing wrong with them. You should totally just use them all the time.
Yeah,
but there are other periods of history, right? Like, so I don't want to weigh in too heavily, right?
Sure.
I think the Italian city war, like city states period, had a little more mercenary tricks and like rules lawyering and stuff. But mercenaries, I think, are generally actually fine, and people kind of need to get over it. Like, that's already what modern,
you know, that's the thing. No, but like,
that's already what professional armies are. Like, the United States Marine Corps is a mercenary organization. Like, you get over, like they're not.
Sure.
Like, the issues people have with mercenaries is when they actually, like, historically as a broad trend, and maybe this applies, who knows, but probably not. But historically, whenever you see mercenaries behaving poorly in any kind of historical incident, they were almost always betrayed first. Because if you look at the power dynamic of, like, the person hiring the mercenaries is generally in a much more powerful position and has reason to fuck over their employers much more than mercenaries who negotiate and agree to a deal and are generally happy with it, you know, or they wouldn't have agreed to it. Generally, mercenaries paying badly are they're sacking the Byzantine Empire because the Byzantines didn't pay them. Usually it's like, oh, we didn't pay them, or we ripped them off, or we did XYZ bad thing to them. mercenaries generally don't do the first. And I think this is actually arguably Wagner's an example of mercenaries not behaving badly. It's like, you know, if you had told the totality of Wagner to like hash this out internally, they probably would have sided with the Russian government. Like, it seems like it was a minority of a minority actually were like in on the coup. And that's the other thing, is that apparently the Wagner guys themselves didn't know it was a coup. They were thought they were repositioning to Belgrade.
I've heard that and I believe it. I don't know that it's true for sure.
Also, like, I don't like the maybe like, I don't know what percentage of Wagner didn't join Wagner. Like, the kind of Wagner guy who would join this thing would it's a kind of a weird Venn diagram of like, he joined Wagner not because to fight in Ukraine, like he joined before that, but also probably after Prigozhin took over, because like, I imagine the pre-Prigozhin guys are not super on board, not the biggest fans of like this guy who was just given their company, you know? So I don't know how much like, so it's like, it's kind of a weird, like the Prigozhin power base that aren't just like Russian, because there's like guys who just joined to fight in Ukraine who are just pure Russian patriots who want nothing to do with a weird coup. And then there's guys who are probably not huge fans of Prigozhin who have been like the old heads, you know? Guys like, Wagner commanders are actually like shadowy figures, so it's kind of hard to remember their names.
Yeah, the only other one that I know is Utkin, who is the actual founder.
Yeah, the old CEO. Old CEO.
May or may not.
Who is Wagner? Literally,
yeah, exactly. That was his. Wagner. That was his call sign. Yeah, it was Wagner. And did he? Does he actually have SS Bolt tattoos or no?
Yes.
He does. Okay.
Yeah. It's based. I mean, they're SS Bolt tattoos in the Russian mafia style, not in the neo-Nazi style, which is actually a meaningful difference.
I'm sure it is. Yes, I'm sure it is.
Yeah. Well, the point of the SS Bolts in the Soviet prison system was to say, like, I'm never getting out of here. Like, I'm never going to rejoin Soviet society because I have, like, this Nazi, this swastika tattooed on my shoulder. Like, you know, it's basically
I could never be normal. Yes.
Yeah. It's commitment to the bit, as it were. Which is weird because I don't think he ever, I know he went, I think he went to jail, but he never went to jail pre 1990, I think. Although I'm not 100% sure on that. Also, shadowy figure, you know, it's hard to say. Like, these.
Right. Yeah.
Though sub warlords, like, individual history is kind of sketchy. But back to, like, the coup itself. I'll save like I have my points to the end. I think that there's a very strong possibility that like this was a totally I don't say legitimate, but like a not NATO involved thing. And my gut feeling on that is that the way it resolved was like would have to for it to have been a NATO psyop, it would have to involve the Russians like giving Prigozhin cold feet in a way that I don't think they made efforts to do. Like, maybe they threatened him personally or whatever, like, oh, we'll fucking kill you if you don't do this, but like Prigozhin could have at any point probably hopped on a plane and been gotten out of there. Like, Rostov-on-Don is right by a bunch of border countries. Like, he could have, if he was an actual NATO guy, he would have like fled to Finland or not Finland, sorry, fled to like Turkey or Greece or Ukraine. Like, this ending up with Prigozhin in Belarus means that at the very least the Russians don't consider this a NATO operation. Now, the Russians said that. I think they were right to say that during at the time. Like, this is clearly a foreign coup because that's what you should say all the time. But the way it was resolved doesn't smack of foreign involvement to me.
Then that also makes it even harder to understand his motive. Because then it's like, okay, but if you didn't even have NATO backing, like, whose backing did you think you have? Or Like, what exactly was?
I think he did the classic mistake of like that populists do. Like, I think that the analogs to January 6th are much stronger than people are comfortable with admitting. Like, this was January 6th. He thought he had a lot of people on his side, and he actually didn't. Like, he thought that people would defect to him in droves. He thought that the troops did love him more than they loved Putin, or the army or whatever, but because he has become a ridiculous figure, people couldn't trust it. Even that's true. Like, there is legitimate resentment in the Russian system to the Ministry of Defense, from all factions, including the militarists. Like Prigozhin is arguably the prime militarist,
That's what I was getting at before. That's how he made his name for himself as a social media figure, was by going after the Ministry of Defense leadership on behalf of the militarist faction.
Yeah. So the problem is, he's a liar, right? Like, he makes shit up. So when you do that, you can't like rally the banners to yourself and march on the Capitol because people know you're a liar. Like, and I think his cult of personality just didn't pan out. He thought it was bigger than it was, and it wasn't. You know,
I'm sure that's a factor, but I'm also convinced that I think the key line for me is when he started saying that the special military operation was just a way to line the pockets of the defense industry.
Yeah, that's dumbass populist rhetoric, though.
Well,
that's what dumbass populists say in every country.
Do they say that in Russia? I don't.
I think absolutely.
That seems like that's a CNN talking point. That's not, and like an extremely unpopular Russian libtards poll, like the Navalny, the leader of Russian libtardism polls at like 20-25% of most.
I think you are underestimating how opaque the Kremlin has been on this whole thing, that Russians are still kind of not quite sure why the fuck they're doing this all. Like, the Kremlin won't just say like it's because they use all these like kind of retarded and coherent things.
Yeah, because they're spooks. That's what I was saying. Like, this is all they're treating it as like a spook thing.
So therefore, like, conspiracy minded explanations are relatively popular, I think, as it like no one really believes they're doing it like to denazify Ukraine. That's not a serious thing. Not even Russian boomers. They're right.
No, they love the rhetoric, they love the memes, but no, they don't. That's not right.
No one's like concerned about Tiger Tech. No one was concerned about a aggressive fascist blitzkrieg out of Ukraine by the Ukrainian government. Like, it's just not
literally the only relevance is they get like people with edgy patches and edgy tattoos so they can own libtards on Twitter with like sunflowers and Ukraine flags in their bio,
and they can appeal to a certain level kind of like, I don't know, like tanky appearing dumbass in the West who is good on foreign policy and nothing else kind of guy. Like, you know, it gives like Noam Chomsky something to work with occasionally if he wants to. Like, I think it's a fig leaf. And then the other thing is they say, Kremlin didn't say, well, listen, we're stopping NATO expansion, which seems like it's not a big deal, but it actually is a huge deal. And that's what we're doing. Like, it's worth the risk. And like, things about defending Russian speakers in Donbass also kind of fall flat because they didn't do that in 2014, right? Like, they let Donbass get shelled for 8 years, so that like all the explanations kind of fall flat. So I think Prigozhin doing like a somewhat generic populism like thing, which he doesn't believe. I don't think he believes that, which is part of why it failed. I think that's
entirely reasonable. I think he's tired. I think he speaks for the billionaire class. You know, it's like the Lorax for fucking kite billionaires. Like, you know. And he's like, stop chopping down my money trees, you know, like, enough is enough.
But he's, I don't know, if he was doing that bit, if he was actually like a disaffected libtard billionaire, he would have like not been the head of Wagner. You know, like.
Well, okay. But yeah, I mean.
You know?
Or he's just like, a mobster that like, he's like, hey, can you, Mr. Mobster Man, can you run an army? Sure, I run an army. Like, well, like, okay.
Then why would he be able, that doesn't, excuse me, that doesn't jive much with the, like, I just don't see the, like, the West Ham, like, you didn't see Western equipment.
No,
or
I get
Western,
what you're saying.
This
yeah.
thing wasn't,
no,
like,
not,
money intensive.
I think they got to him, no, I think they got to him in, like, I don't know, November, December, there was a big,
what, do you, what does that look like? Like, they got somebody in his ear talking about how you could totally do a coup, like, or they, like, turned him with
money, like, pick, money, and yes, the,
no, that's,
you,
like,
you have support. The MOD
they,
is very disgruntled.
If they turned
you, you
him
do
with
this,
money,
and there's, we have intelligence that indicates support for such a thing coming from our, you know, and they were saying, we know, I mean, that was in part of the leaks. They were saying shit like that. And so if you do this, you'll have internal support and we'll make sure that you get to keep your money.
Okay. So let's say this is a CIA bit, right? Then if it is a CIA bit, Prigozhin would not have taken like the negotiation bit. He would have fled quietly and had that column get in some kind of very discrediting firefight with the Russian National Guard. Like what happened, and then he would have fled to a NATO country, because if you're trying to discredit the Russian system.
But that's just, then that would have just, that would just discredit him. Then everybody would, then he would just become the villain, and I don't know that that would necessarily work. I get what you're saying, and I
like
maybe
the,
it's just
the,
he's sentimental. I have no idea. Yeah, it's like, it's a problem with my theory.
The thing is that he must have backed down, right? Like he must have, so you're like cucked on this, but like it's kind of a crazy thing to go this far. And like Rostov on Don has an airport. He could have like gotten out of there. He could have been in Turkish airspace like that, you know. Like it's not especially if he's like a fighter jet, you know, out. He very well, he could have like literally escaped.
But then he looks like the world's biggest asshole and everybody instantly stops fighting.
But he already looks like the world's biggest asshole. That's what he described his current status.
Well, maybe he just got maneuvered into a no-win position.
In
I
fact,
mean, like,
he's argued the world's biggest asshole because now he can't do the bit where he goes to like talk about the free Rostov Republic, you know, like, if he can be
no,
parading,
he didn't even
he
get
parading,
to do that. Yeah, exactly.
He
right,
can be
right.
parading around Berlin, talking about how, you know,
we're the like, legitimate government of Rostov, which totally
you know,
seceded
or
from
all
Russia.
Yeah, yeah. The thing is, I also don't like the theory that the other PSYOP theory that this is all a Putin plot. Like,
no,
Putin
that's
trying
that's
to,
dumb. That's dumb. It was
well,
pretty,
we originally
it was,
thought, and I because I admit we both originally thought. That this was like a plan. This was all horseshit.
The whole thing looked so fake in that first
we
6 to 8 hours.
It was
everything looked
fake. Like,
the video
thought,
was fake. The audio messages were fake. Everything was like was weird and surreal. And these, it just
we,
was,
so
it, it
we,
was a
what
TV
we
show.
Was what we thought, and I'll admit it was that. Well, I think you had it. You thought it was a little. I thought they were trying to shore up in the Ukrainian support to keep pushing because Ukraine has announced they're stopping the counterattacks for like a week or something like that. They announced
yeah, they had already
pause.
Announced that a few days before.
I think they
again,
were
like,
they were
whatever.
Really trying. I thought they were trying to get the Ukrainians to just keep grinding against their lines. Like, hey, dumbass, we're weak. We're internally weak. Whereas
yes.
you thought of like the redeployment. They're covering a redeployment. It's not impossible, but both of those are obviously now not true. And the more right. conspiracy thing of like Putin was smoking out disloyalists. In which case he found zero, like he found one, I guess, or like this was a yeah. Or Prigozhin, it was a plot for Putin to just like dismiss Shoigu, which he could just do. He's like, people underestimate, I think, how monarchist Russia is in like a very de facto sense. Like Putin is like the emperor of Japan. Like you, people who criticize the Russian government don't mention his name. Like you, Putin is a sacred figure. And even Prigozhin, until Putin directly said like Prigozhin is a traitor, didn't say anything about it, Putin as he was sending troops against like the capital. So I think
I don't think he ever did say anything bad about Putin.
he did after after he made the speech, Prigozhin did make some kind of statement that was like, we'll stop anybody, including Putin. Like if they before he cupped like 4 hours later, but So I think this is like more legitimate. The way I look at it is this is a guy who he was foiled through like bureaucratic means internally in the MOD, and then decided to become a popular figure, but wasn't quite smart enough to pull it off or gauge how much support he actually had. And here the other thing is that you can also get that he achieved like limited success if you look at it through like this was actually, which I think I also brought another way to view it, was like this was like a labor strike, like a strike. If we use this as a purely labor dispute, like, or just like we're the Wagner Union, and we want to redeploy to Africa and have fun again, and dunk on skinnies like constantly, and like steal gold, you know, we're tired of this. We want just the option for some the guys who wanted to go that can do that now, and I think Prigozhin probably wants to do that more because like. You can skim off the top a lot easier. It's like you just skim like diamonds and gold bars going back to Russia than it is to skim like artillery shells going into Ukraine. You can't make any. This is a funny thing in the Russian system where there was this kind of status hierarchy based on stealing from your job, you know, among like the poor, the non party members. Like, let's say you're an electrician, right? You want to be the electrician at the wine factory or the cheese factory or the, you know, whatever factory, the auto, like, but you don't want to be at an automobile factory or like a heavy industry factory or work as a military factory because you can't steal like, you know, reject sausage from the job, but because at like the radar plant, if you're an electrician and you're making like heavy industry shit, you nothing to skim. And that was a legitimate concern for people. It's like, well, because I have to utilize this like Soviet barter thing because there's not enough money around. Like, even if it's like, oh, I work at the notebook factory. Well, that you can trade notebooks for stuff. You know, your kids always have notebooks. Other kids, people won't, right? And I think there's a level of like, I want to get back into the like where I can do criminality. There's actually a very famous joke of because as a result of the Soviet, is that there were a lot of like police and commissars were devoted to like loss prevention in factories more than like ideological concerns because as things got post 1965, as the ideology became a little more irrelevant, there's a great joke / story of the worker Dmitry is, you know, he's taking his wheelbarrow full of garbage outside of the factory every day at the end of his shift, and every day the commissar sees him with a wheelbarrow just full of just trash and rocks and dirt, and he disappears, and he comes back right before the shift ends every day. And one day the commissar follows him. He can't figure out what he's doing. He's following him for days. And then, you know, the third day, the commissar says, I get it. You're smarter than me, Dmitry. I just need to know what the fuck are you stealing from the factory? And he said, comrade, I'm stealing wheelbarrows. Right. Yeah, and it's just an ingrained part of this of the society, the culture. Like, you steal from work, and Wagner can't steal from work. And I think for guys who aren't patriots in Wagner, I think that's that does, like, there's a lot of non-patriotic Russians, I think, in Wagner, like, who are just like, I just like, they like war, and then much like the Western volunteers in Ukraine, like, damn, this fucking sucks. I want to go fight terrorists again, where it's like, cool, I could drive a Toyota Hilux and, you know, take cool pictures and, you know, not, and like play on my cell phone and not worry about getting hit with artillery. I think that's there's a faction in Wagner that probably was on board for this and is also probably seething and like almost anti-patriotic because Wagner recruited a bunch of, before the war in Africa, like much like Western and other like Eastern NATO Special Forces guys, like guys who were like French or German or Polish, the guys who were other Special Forces. I know a lot of Italians and French joined Wagner because they just wanted to, like, you know, dunk on skinnies in Africa. And those guys all got to keep doing it when the war started because they couldn't trust those guys to come back and fight for the Russian government because they're like, hey, you were ex-French Special Forces. Like, the odds of you sending information back are low but too high. So, like, some of Wagner has gotten to stay and, like, keep having fun. And I think a lot of guys who are jealous. And I think it's not that many. I think most of them are patriots. But, like, that, you know, what percentage of 25,000 guys probably formed, like, a nucleus of guys who Prigozhin could bounce this idea off of and would be like, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. And arguably that faction was, like, just in this peace deal, kind of given what they wanted. And I don't think Prigozhin's gone because, or he's going to just, I think he's going to remain some kind of a figure for a while. Maybe they'll kill him in like 2 years, but it's almost like in Russia, coups historically actually don't get you in much trouble. You want to talk about like this element, how like,
yes, you've mentioned that. And it does check out.
Yeah. Except for the one time, which wasn't even a coup. It was, like, it's actually worse to not commit a coup. Getting purged for not committing a coup will get you killed way faster in Russia than, like, actually committing a coup and failing. You know? So, like, well, what's the name? Sorovkin, the possible successor to Shogu?
Sorovkin, yes. Sorovkin. General Armageddon, yes.
Yeah. He, in the 90s, he was part of the anti-Yeltsin coup that failed and was famous for bringing, like, I think most of a motor rifle company to Moscow. They were just too late to affect the outcome. Like, he showed up, like, you know, 6 hours post end of coup with a motor rifle company and full of, like, BMPs that had been hauling ass, I want to say, from Kaliningrad? Actually, not sure. Somewhere in the Western military district, and like, of course, he was thrown in jail, but he got a flight because he was pretty low rank, and now he's literally the highest ranking guy in the Russian, like, highest ranking commanding officer. He's not staff in the staff, but he, like, a coup is generally a bit of a, like, a career ender historically in most militaries. Like, being on the losing end of a coup is generally, you know, okay, we, like, you're never getting promoted again. They don't just let bygones be bygones. But in Russia, they kind of do. And it's really, really, like, I don't know if it's something to do with the Russian.
They have a very large territory for internal exile is where I mean, that's like where the Siberia meme kind of comes from, right? Is, you know, they have just this vast, extremely sparsely populated expanse for internal exiles. I think that's a lot of it.
Yeah, a lot of it is, like, Russia has a lot of, also just, like, even the military specifically, like, there's a lot of, always been, like, a lot of frontier to send these guys to. Like, one place you sent guys who were kicked out of the army in Russia for, like, criminal stuff was Wagner. Like, you used to send those guys to, you know, not Siberia, but, like, the border forts with, like, you know, on the Caucasus. Like, okay, well, you're kind of a soldier who was kicked out, an officer who offended somebody important. I guess you're going to somewhere in the Caucasus to fight somebody in the Caucasus, the Dazakhstanis or whatever. And now it was like, oh, well, you'll go fight in Mali. And that actually is historically a lot more lucrative than fighting in Dazakhstan, you know, for obvious reasons. Africa is more resource rich and exploitable than, you know, the Avar Mountains. So I think there's an element of that. Prigozhin might get off relatively unscathed, like, and Wagner shouldn't be based in Russia. Like, there's reasons that it makes sense to have this organization, like, this wink wink nod nod thing just in Belarus, you know, like, oh, it's the Belarusian Wagner, it's totally not affiliated. If they're gonna do, like, this fig leaf bit, might as well do it through them, right? So I think that most of the thing is, I don't think it's a psyop. I don't think it's a I don't think it's a Putin psyop. I don't think it's a Western operation to, like, break. Like, the theory, I think, to give your theory, like, the most credit, I think, or not your theory, but the NATO did this theory, is that this was supposed to be scheduled with the cracking of, like the Ukraine offensive would have cracked the lines. The Russian army would be reconsolidating and trying to, like, shore up around Melitopol or something, and or Mariupol, like in like the final defensive lines right now at this point. And actually, and then like to have Wagner desert at that point would have been like utterly devastating and end the war. And of course, and the reason this didn't pan out was because the, you know, the Ukraine advance didn't pan out. But the reason I don't like that, and I don't think it's a terrible idea, is that this coup relied on Wagner being perceived as like heroes, like what they did. Like the reason they got so close to Moscow was because it was not just as if like, oh, an army unit is marching onto the capital. It was like, imagine like the guys who rose, like waved the flag over Iwo Jima came home and were hostile and marched on the capital. Like Wagner are heroes. Like they are perceived as heroic, and like the whole like taking those losses, like if the legitimate like Iwo Jima flag bearers came back from World War II and like were leading their unit on a march on Washington, you can't just shoot them, right? But if they were deserting during like a crisis point where like the lines have fractured and like, you know, Donetsk city is under threat, then you could just have shot them or blown them the fuck up from the air. Like the maybe it would, I don't even know how discrediting like that would, they would have had no reason not to. They would be like, so Wagner in this way has like maintained its reputation, which this all relied on. So I don't think, like, I think Prigozhin chose this point for a coup because it was the least damaging to the Russian cause, actually. Like, his motivations are, like, obviously hard to guess, but I don't think they're anti-Russian. And I know...
So the NATO conspiracy theory is that this was timed to coincide with when they genuinely believed they would be knocking on the doors of Tokmak and maybe even of Melitopol. They expected to make rapid progress.
Shattering. Shattering.
Punching immediately through the first probably two lines of Russian defense and then exploiting that with
the phrase the reserve. Breakout gets used a lot, yeah. Like a true breakout.
Yeah, breakout, exactly, yes. That they would be classic, you know, kind of thing. And obviously that didn't happen, and the reserves, the first wave of reserves had to end up getting used to just continue that initial assault, which also didn't work. And so then they are figuring out what they want to do next. In the meantime, this op would have, for whatever reason, and who knows? I mean, hearing you talk is somewhat persuasive, but I'm always a little persuaded by the last thing I heard, and I'd have to think about it more.
The Prigozhin op, like, okay, this is like a CIA job. This is NATO doing it. Do you think, like, assuming Prigozhin is not like 100, so there's theory where Prigozhin is being influenced, right? Or Prigozhin is just their agent. If Prigozhin is just their agent, he would just like, all right, I guess I'm just not doing the op today, right? Obviously this, the phase one failed of the plan, so I'm not going to do phase two, assuming he's their agent. If he's being influenced by somebody to do this, like some kind of person who has gotten his ear, would it have been so like perfectly timed with the Ukrainian offensive, like to where like this could even benefit, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's like that. It's a lot to ride, and couldn't that person just say, "Oh well," like that person influencing could say, "Well, you know, now it's not quite the time." Like, it relies on the idea that Prigozhin had been like kind of wound up by with somebody in his ear to go off 3 weeks post offensive for sure, like a wind up.
It's certainly very strange, what are the actual mechanics of? Yeah.
You know.
Well, at some point it's like Prigozhin just doesn't have the wherewithal to understand that it's not going to happen, but that's a problem in real life too, right?
His handler convinced him of this and then couldn't convince him out.
to like delay it or like,
yeah, because
assuming
like
assuming you've convinced him, wouldn't it be very easy to say, hey, well, we need to gather more X-Way support? Because like, assuming there's a, you know, Wagner's plotting a coup, presumably every day they're plotting and gathering support is like, you know, a benefit to this coup, right? Like they're not, and the risk of being exposed, and then like apparently like, I don't know. I just don't see like the, like them, Prigozhin saying like, well, we'll begin gathering support for me as a figure. Like the, I don't know. I just don't think he was a agent the whole time. And the thing like that, I think even they said on TDS that he went to Bakhmut to become a, which he did do, like become a media figure and a populist kind of figure. At that point, it was already like the NATO op had begun. If he was like so in their pocket that he's been like following this game plan for what, 6 to 9 months, I think it'd be very easy to like just not do it. Or like, or even like if he was about to get caught for doing, for plotting a coup, be like, oh, well, that was just like bluster. I plot, you know, I plot a coup every, you know, 2 weeks. It seems like it, I find like, what are the actual mechanics of like NATO backing this guy? Like, it just feels, it feels as unsatisfying to me as the Putin did it fit to like to fire the defense minister or to smoke out dissenters kind of thing. Like,
yeah, but then it's like, is he really that big of an idiot? I, you know, we're right back at how does this moron get in charge of this operation?
So you're saying, I don't know. I mean, he is a taco.
No,
he is
I'm like not. A hot I'm dog just asking. Like,
no, I'm saying, well, he is like a hot dog stand mogul. Like, he is kind of an idiot. You know, like, or he's just a, he's like an Archie Bunker kind of figure. You know, that's why I relate this to like he is not, when I say it's January 6th, he's the Trump grandma in January 6th. Like he is both the Trump and Trump grandma. He is both the figure spewing his bullshit and believing it, if that makes sense. Like,
well, I think, yeah, I mean, it's just impenetrable, I guess, to me, ultimately, is the kind of bottom line, is it's that at the level of, you know, what the hell is going through this guy's head? Not much, I guess. Not much. So,
well, also that, like, to not get into, like, oh, Prigozhin is a secret genius, but, like, this is also a way that he does get, like, out of the war in Ukraine. Like, he couldn't, and like he has maintained a certain amount of like prestige throughout this whole thing. He is an asshole, but he is still like the Wagner guy, where he could have been like, he was looking at like just kind of being put out to pasture and like kind of forgotten about or killed in the war, right, by the Ukrainians. And now he's like still involved and in the Wagner thing. Like, well, I guess we spun off into like two Wagners. One is doing the overseas work, and one is just like they're just part of the Russian army in Ukraine. And he has gotten into like the more profitable end of that. Because I don't think they're going to kill him. I don't. It just doesn't seem like.
I mean, one has to assume that if they would have killed him, they would have killed him already.
I mean, I guess they could also do waiting for the poison for a while, but yeah.
But certainly, if it were to make a big show out of it as a to make a point, that moment has passed. And if it's just to poison him, just because fuck you, I guess there's that. But I don't know. I mean, maybe it's just the cloak and you know, Putin seems. I have to say, like, there was only a period of a couple hours, very, very little of this did I like feel that Putin was maybe getting the bad end of the trade. And I was reflecting on it and I was thinking, you know, it's not that I think that like the nation state of Russia can't make mistakes or something. It's not even exactly that I think that Putin can't make mistakes. Although I couldn't say that I've seen him make one really. I mean, the closest thing would be the feint to Kiev, to the opening gambit, the opening bid that was declined. And, you know, I think a lot of the meme of Russia's getting their ass kicked in this war is, I guess, just the assumption that all those 40,000 plus troops and all that big giant convoy that was just sitting on the Chernobyl to Kiev highway, just waiting to get bombed by NATO airplanes or something. And they never did. And I guess they just assumed, people talk about Russian losses, they assumed like all that shit got blown up in the glorious Battle of Kiev, you know, or something. It's not, I don't really follow their mythology too closely, but point being, I don't really see that as a mistake. And, you know, it was interesting, heartening to hear Mike's take on Monday after it all shook out over the weekend of, yes, I think the correct take is, I agree, of course, with the chairman that Putin played this very well. Whatever he knew, whenever he knew it, decisions that he made that at the time might have seemed like, for example, not just blowing the shit out of that convoy as soon as they killed border guards and were doing this, like, obviously that was not necessary, and it would have been extremely damaging and caused way more problems than it just wouldn't have solved anything and would only have caused more problems. And all the kind of people were saying initially that would the like hour or two where I doubted was when it seemed as though Putin's hands had been tied in a way that demonstrated a kind of weakness. But if anything, this whole episode has really only strengthened his hands. Apparently he's a fan. You don't think so?
I don't think it helped, but because Putin is like this kind of sacred, like Japanese emperor figure in Russian politics, he's bulletproof. But so
I think it extends beyond that. There's that, but he just got a massive public vote of confidence, right?
Yes, so the whole shtick with Putin is that the reason that he is this like god figure, this kind of, you know, sun king of Russia, is that he ended the 1990s and created like a modern capitalist through our country, right?
I mean, there were glowing profiles of him in like the
event. That will never end. Like in Russia, like he's like, well, remember the 90s? Like they'll be like, wow, like, you know, it's that's he's Dwight Eisenhower. That's his like Normandy invasion. Like it's always going to be like when you think of Putin, you're going to think that. You're like, oh wow, and like you don't want to go back to the 90s, do you? The 90s were shitty, and one of the reasons the 90s were shitty in Russia is because they were like occasionally military officers would just decide to coup the government, like endemic corruption. So the biggest things that Russia didn't like were obviously like no public services, like, you know, police and like basic public service was gone, healthcare was privatized, and they were fucking, the economy was shrinking, and there were fucking coups and stuff. Like there was coups and bullshit happening under Yeltsin, and Putin has put a stop to all those things and reversed most of them. But like a return to coups is like of those four major improvements, that's one of the major improvements that Putin made since the 90s was, hey, we don't have a constant, you know, there's no like coup threat anymore. Like it's not a thing we do anymore. And that happening, I think, is a, like, it would be better for this to have not happened. Like, as a political analyst, a government is in a better place when it's not been couped versus when it's been recently attempted to be couped. And that's without exception.
I think if you take a shot at the king, you best not miss. And
what if you're doing a kind of a really high concept labor negotiation? Which is the other way to view this, was like this was all purely a psyop by Prigozhin just to get like this more. He came out with a strong initial offer of
I don't know, man. He was saying really, he was saying crazy shit. He was playing, he was giving CNN shit to talk about and saying what CNN was saying just as a matter of course. And that became his whole line on everything. And it was a liability. Nobody wanted to talk about it, but nobody really felt the need to do anything about it, other than I guess the Russian government wanted to fold up Wagner, and that's, you know, at the deadline for that is when he did this. Now, I agree, it's the mechanics of any overt intentional involvement with Western intelligence services are tough. That's a maybe an unsolvable problem, but it's still just I don't know.
Compare this to the, I don't know, we may have to cut this, but to compare this to the coup attempt against the NJP that recently happened, where they got somebody in somebody's ear to like convince them of a plot against them, which meant you have to move first with what you have, which wasn't much, and it was ultimately discrediting. Like, I don't think, like, yes, Zod can get somebody into like one of our inner circles just to whisper in our ears, or convince somebody to whisper in somebody's ear. I don't know if the mechanics of that can be executed. Like, I don't think Prigozhin is like getting advice from circles that like are easy to insert people into, especially when he's like under artillery fire in Bakhmut, right? Like, I don't see like a comparable mechanism. I see like the parallels, because guys made the parallels. We were talking about the chats, like they're doing to Wagner, they tried to do to us. But I just think the actual like mechanics of how Zog pulls that off don't really apply. Like, it's like the guy was hanging out in Wagner PMC. Like, listen, if I just don't think like there's too many CIA guys inserted into Wagner PMC. Like, it's just by nature of the job, like to do entryism into Wagner, you have to the interview process is kind of a bitch to get in a Prigozhin's inner circle.
I get what you're saying, but I think there's also, you know, that which does not kill you makes you stronger to sign. I mean, that's a kind of, it's not always true, of course, but in this kind of a situation, I don't think, at a minimum, I don't think Putin's going to have to worry. I mean, anybody who wanted to jump off sides would have jumped. Some people did jump off sides, not a lot, but some did. There were a bunch of, they were making fun on Russian social media. Apparently people were paying like 4 or 5 times the going rate for immediate flights out of like St. Petersburg to Georgia, to Tbilisi. So, you know, there's some silver linings here.
I will steel man the with somebody that, like, I think this thing would be possible is if they had some. So I don't think Prigozhin was for like money. Prigozhin didn't do this for, well, not for like a Western lump sum of cash. I don't think that's how this worked. Because if he did that, he would be in Berlin right now, you know, like using his Western lump sum of cash and probably having ended this in a way messier way than he did. But I think it's possible like they had some dirt on him, like, you know, what is it? Dead girl or alive boy kind of thing. Like, NATO had some kind of evidence of him doing some kind of misbehavior or saying something stupid or whatever, and like we're using it to handle him in this way. And then midway through the coup, like the handler or the intelligence agents got cold feet somehow and said, oh yeah, I gave him the go ahead to kind of cuck. I could see maybe that being the thing, but I don't think he was their agent the whole time. And like now that he's cupped, they'd rather have, I don't know. It's hard for me to construct what happened if
he had like a NATO handler. Like it's, I can kind of do it, but
yeah, no, I yeah, but I mean, I guess that's the maybe at a certain level, Occam's razor is he's just a grug hot dog salesman, and there's not like a whole lot more to it than that. I don't know. It's the whole episode is very strange, but and I guess the you know, medium and long term aftermath are just TBD.
Yeah. I do want to talk about the commentary from the West on it, which is like it was hilarious, not just for Gunther, but like there were libtards like, oh, the apathy of like Russians are just drinking coffee next to tanks rolling down their street and soldiers marching. It's like, what the fuck do you think Americans would do if tanks rolled down the street and weren't shooting at them? Yeah.
Yeah.
Like that. Like, you'd be like, oh, you know, that's what it is. Like, no one gives a fuck, like, about, that's one of the great things is, like, you know, if you're putting up a NJP sticker or doing whatever, like, no one gives a fuck about anything. It's, I don't know if that's modern culture or it's always been this way in cities, but, like, the hand-wringing about, like, the Russian psyche, and then, of course, like, the, also just, like, the beloved, the Wagner freedom fighters, like, Wagner was basically being, like, what does Wagner do? Well, they execute civilians with sledgehammers for fun, was the narrative. And then for, like, 2 days, it was, like, the heroic Wagner Corps of the Republic of, you know, Rostov-on-Don or marching for freedom, which I did appreciate that. And then immediately, of course, the switch flipped back. Was that Twitter account that said, like, it within, like, 8 hours, they went from Wagner Freedom Fighters.
Yes, Wagner Freedom Fighters to Wagner Terrorists. Yes.
And then the deal was cut. It was like Wagner Terrorists except deal.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, I liked that. Of course, Gunther was great. I don't think the meme, the conservative meme is very stupid because like when the Office of Budget and Accounting and Budgets released, like, oh, there was some, they evaluated some military hardware incorrectly and forgot to carry some ones, and actually we sent $4 billion extra aid to Ukraine. Oh, that was a bribe for Prigozhin. It's like that's not how that works. Like that if Prigozhin was getting a bribe, it wouldn't have been like something you could find at the Office of, you know, Budgets and Numbers bullshit. So I think that very grug like conservative narrative, which is better than the narrative it was all to distract from Hunter Biden's laptop, which also I want to bring how dumb conservative. I want to bring how stupid it is because the conservative brain, the rightoid brain, doesn't understand like scale. It's kind of like an infant or a child, you know, where like if you put a dinosaur toy close to their heads, it appears to them larger. If it's further away, it's smaller. Because you understand like a civil war in Russia is a bigger event than the Hunter Biden laptop. Like, you don't
just strike. It's a bigger event than Joe Biden being impeached and removed from office as a result of the Hunter Biden laptop.
Yeah. Like, if you think the American government has the ability to, like, launch this operation in order to distract from Hunter Biden's laptop, you would have never, you wouldn't even know Hunter Biden's name if the American government had that much power. Like,
nobody, I don't think. Yeah, I don't think anybody knows Putin's daughter's name nor her mother's name.
No, his daughter did get big. I don't know the mother. No, they think they do. No, because his daughter.
Okay. Well, it wasn't always.
CNN found out, or somebody found out that she is the one that like actually holds
when
the money
he,
in the family.
When he broke up with his previous waifu GF and got new waifu GF, that was briefly news.
Yeah. Yes. I don't know. You also like I don't know if the CIA can name all like what is it like the 12 Wagner commanders, like the sub commanders who actually control on the ground operations of like
absolutely.
I'd be very questioned like does anybody does I think a couple of them are known from Syria, but like the new ones who've been promoted through the ranks during the war, I think they're not. I don't even know what the fuck they are, and they like it that way, obviously.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it's an interesting phenomenon to observe, the rightoid brain is many keks. Many keks.
Yeah. I hate Rectoid. I'm not a fan of these right wing guys. These not a fan of the Rectoids. they're face blind. There's a lot of problems with the Rectoid. I like the
fact. Well, they keep getting dunked on Twitter nowadays. It's interesting to see I think enough of our narratives are, I mean, that's essentially how I got quote unquote red pilled, was being absorbed, you know, just having the absorbing narratives on Twitter. But now the narratives have spread so far. I think, you know, if you look at it as a kind of, from the Jewish perspective, as a kind of mind virus, this is like the patient's terminal. Like there's no, like it's beyond critical mass. Like Matt Walsh, every single reply when he had that retarded tweet about how, you know, it was Hitler's fault for trannies. Like trannies are Hitler, you know, trannies are secret Nazis, and they, you know, Nazis were behind all this. It was just nonstop. And it wasn't, I mean, you know, back in the day it would have been like, you know, kebab removal Pepe or something. Now it's just like there's a lot of like face fags even who are just dunking on him for that. Yeah, there's no like how will conservatism ever recover? I don't think it can.
Yeah, and I also like the best is when like they combine the narratives. Like, well, the Titanic submarine thing didn't successfully cover up Hunter Biden's laptop, so they launched.
Right, and this is the schizo conspiratory brain. Yes, this is the my conspiracies are totally plausible and non schizophrenic. Unlike those bad tinfoil hat wearers.
yeah. No, it's so true. Do you want to talk?
But no, really, they are like paranoid. There's like so much undiagnosed mental illness.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Do you want to discuss? Speaking of that, not to discredit too much, the no planes theory of this event.
Oh, maybe for a minute.
So the point for me at which I got to my most like, oh fuck, this might be right, black pilled state was when the news that they had downed there was video of them shooting at, but news that they had downed and killed the crew of a Russian aviation forces aircraft. I believe it was like Alligator. Like that news got out that they had killed one, and that's when we realized, oh fuck, this is like.
So here's my autism on this that I think, or maybe this is where you're going, but just to jump in, to me, the real black pill wasn't even that. It was specifically that they had shot down three of the electronic warfare variants.
I didn't know that until after.
I saw that not, it was not over yet when I saw that. And that was when, or maybe it was right immediately after, I guess it was all kind of a blur, but, when I learned that, I got, though they only have like 24 of those and they don't have production lines for them. So it's like a real, and they also had a fixed wing, like AWACS equivalent that got shot down, which is an even bigger loss because they only have like 10 of those.
This gets into my no plans there. I don't think that many aircraft were shot down. I think, yes, I think so. But anyway, some guys have been saying, followers who I generally respect, that that, you know, we've been talking in our little chat. See, like they have kind of, which is a good quality to have in this war, like picks or it didn't happen syndrome, which I respect. But they're even to the point.
Oh,
of, like,
yeah.
No aircraft were lost because we haven't seen any pictures of downed aircraft in Russia. Regardless of that, is that like that it's almost impossible. Like any kind of picture could be just like dismissed as like that's any number of downed aircraft in Ukraine. Like what is a Rostov Oblast field full of burned aircraft look meaningfully different than a Kharkov Oblast field with a downed aircraft in it? It's almost impossible to like the actual, like how meaningful it would be for like picks could even, if this was totally a fake incident, they could fake up picks or use picks from other incidents. Like that wouldn't, I don't think that's the barrier here. And I think Putin making the statement about, you know, lost air, fallen airmen seals it for me more so than the Prigozhin. Maybe it didn't happen. Maybe it did.
True. I saw one helicopter that was referred to as confirmed as having geolocated to like that Rostov area or the column or the march to Moscow. I forget. It was some. It was along their path. It was, as I understand it, geolocated. And I saw footage of. I guess I also saw, I saw footage of an aircraft going down. I saw aircraft wreckage. I don't know if it was geolocated or not. As part of that, and that's in any case one fixed wing, one helicopter. There's all the those. I've only seen two aircraft carcasses, and those are the only two. That's true.
I
but what's their motivation for claiming more? Like, why would they just to look weak? I mean, maybe I could see that.
I think that I think that gets into like they are actually doing some military psyop stuff. Like, oh goodness, all our EW's down. Like, I like you need to tell me they're using four EW aircraft to observe this convoy.
Why? Yeah. No.
But that's all you had on hand. Yeah. And I get it. Like EW platforms and AWACS platforms are like observational platforms. More so, like actually doing ground, air-based offensive EW stuff is like kind of bizarre. You actually you should be using them for like monitoring, and I'm sure there's real hot cameras on those things. But like, why? Like Russia has a doctrine for marking convoys that aren't hostile but might be from Syria. It's a very known doctrine. It's you use two hinds or two alligators, and you get right the fuck up on them, like really close, like. Scary close because I have friends who experienced this in Syria in a convoy. And oh, there's just two Russian fucking choppers just they're close.
Just
and
they're just
and they're just hanging out for until and that's what they do. And like we're not being aggressive, you know, it's just a two non-hostile nations just kind of hanging out. You and your MRAP and me and my alligator with my ATGMs. Let's not worry about this. And that, and like to the point, and it happened so much over there. It did become a fun thing. Like initially, it's like, holy fuck, like that's an ATGM aircraft, and that's me.
And you're like and, waving and, at and the pilot, like, "Hey, Yuri, nice to see you."
Yeah, and eventually, that is what it becomes. Like, but in that situation, were the Americans to actually like, shoot Stingers at it, they'd fuck them up. Like that is the doctrine of like marketing. Yeah, yeah. With the Russian
yes, and then it came out at, so the first news so to come
saying,
out was
saying
that there had been a shootdown, and then it came out that there was a Wagner, at least one Wagner vehicle that got blown the fuck out, and I saw a video of a vehicle that was claimed to be footage of that happening.
I didn't see footage. I saw a burned out some kind of truck or some kind of thing.
No, I saw the Wagner. Explosion as I recall. So
but I think like in that market, I think if any KAs were hit, it was a pair that were doing that marking maneuver, because if you're doing that and they decide to shoot AT, you're within like manpad range, like a lot. So I think that's what they were doing. I think I would say maybe two, but after they, the theory with the electronic warfare thing was like after that they were doing like long range observation and were hit with like Strelas, but
I hear why you would call bullshit on that and
like also after
there's obvious incentive to
after you lose the first one you keep sending like wave after wave of electronic warfare helicopters like this just, why would you send a conventional alligator like that it would do 95% of the job, unless they were like trying to snoop transmission. Like I can see a rationale for why you would send one, right? Like they're trying to snoop on some kind of signal, like doing kind of signal gathering stuff. But after you lose it just feels weird.
Yeah, well certainly they would have proven themselves to be then you would need to be more
and also they didn't just like if they had shot down like what is the high estimate is wild. It's like 18 aircraft.
It's like 11 aircraft or something. 11 aircraft. I don't know about 8. Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
The Russian air the aviation army, which is a separate the Air Force, whatever we call it, they would have probably regardless of orders just started fucking, like you know.
Oh yeah.
JDAMing like right like
ham.
After,
yeah, just going like, ham. Going
like,
ham
on regardless of because regardless of like
going ham with JDAM,
like the political blah blah blah, like you can't allow as the commander of the Moscow fucking air zone, like a big dead zone air defense in your net. That's just like instant. Like, no, I don't believe.
No,
like,
just no.
Yeah.
Like, that's not gonna happen. Yeah, like,
you're not letting an enemy net in your net. No,
you wouldn't presumably need much authorization to start responding.
Yeah, that gets into like DEFCON shit. Like if someone set up a Patriot missile defense battery in their backyard, you know, it's
like, and then like, with them, like yeah, right, and then started shooting down, yeah, like AWACS yeah, like, or whatever,
yeah,
and like flying over DC as it advances to the Capitol, like yeah. Okay, yeah. So I don't know, yeah. Who knows with the planes? I do think it's pretty clear that there were at least two aircraft shot down. I think that's pretty incontrovertible, yeah. And I don't think much more time needs to be spent on that question.
And I think a lot of that is kind of the fact that it wasn't a shitload of them, and it's probably testified by like there was a peace that they did have a peace conference and like or a peace deal, and then an agreement was reached. Like I think 11 aircraft and crews is like pretty that would have made the Russian government, as they like to say, agreement incapable. Like that's a lot of people. Like there's no way I think especially with like how relatively small the convoy was. Like if you killed 11 aircraft, that's like 50 guys. If this convoy is like 200 guys, that's almost like I guess we'll just kill these guys and, you know, make it even. Although Prigozhin also not being with them makes it weird. Also the thing is I don't think they'd be the Wagner guys would be shooting that aggressive at air defense. Like, without Prigozhin with them, you know, or you know, if he wasn't with them, maybe you shoot those initials too. But you're not going to be shooting down every fucking thing in the sky without like orders from Prigozhin to do that. And I don't think, like, had that order been intercepted, if such an order was from Prigozhin, like, hey, shoot down every single aircraft in the sky you can see, he wouldn't be in Belarus. He'd be dead. Like they would have maybe agreed to this and killed him. Like they'd be broadcasting that order to shoot down all our aircraft on Russian like TV. Yep, this is why we hung him, you know, kind of stuff. So yeah, I'm not 100% no planes, but I am a, you know, less planes than are claimed by certain sectors. Also, I don't think the MOD is officially given an accounting of losses in this thing yet. Putin's speeches are only official accounting of losses, right? Is there been anything more like official on the total, you know, deaths?
No, I'm actually, this is a question that I have as well. I don't even know what would count as, I guess MOD press releases would be official, I guess. And yeah. I'm not sure what was an MOD press release and what
was. When was the last one? I know that they're every like 2 to 4 weeks, right?
They started again I started seeing again the clobber reports, as they call it, over in Moon of Alabama, which where they just, you know, these extremely dry, like, we, you know, these number of, you know, we 13 objects of military significance were hit by aviation and aerospace forces, okay, and the blah blah blah
thing. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I also do want to point out in terms of the grand theory that I think we're left with Prigozhin as a grug, which I don't quite like, but that is like the other explanatory theory is like, well, Prigozhin is a Russian, not a NATO Jew. Prigozhin's a Russian Jew. Like, this is Prigozhin doing, like, a Russian Jew maneuver. Like, he doesn't like the war. Like, he is doing things to influence, like, for, like, as he, and Russian Jews are not, you know, it's somewhat of a lower tier, a little more grug, a little more, like, you know, the Bolsheviks, you know, didn't sort of, like, weren't that smart. They got very lucky, you know, with the previous revolution actually doing all the work and then kind of just then kicking over the, you know, previous revolution. So if you view this as like this is like an act of a Russian Jew, I think it makes a little more sense, like the disloyalty and the kind of self-aggrandizement, like the people that, like, it's a very like Lenin kind of maneuver, right? To do this thing, like, it's, you know,
yeah, kinda, yeah,
like if you view this as like, you know, Prigozhin as a Russian Jew, I think it makes a certain amount of more sense. Like, their view of how you seize power in Russia is like, well, you know, I have, you know, I have, it seems like I have some Gentiles on my side as a military wing, and I'll just kind of kick it and it'll all fall apart like it did last time. You know, like, I think the Russian Jew view of the Russian state is like, obviously probably has a thing that's extremely fragile edifice because before Putin, and then maybe they say, oh, the Ukraine war showed that actually it's just the Putin state was just as weak as the Yeltsin state or the Soviet state or the Tsarist state or the revolutionary state. So maybe I'll just give it a good kick and it'll come down. And then it didn't. And then he did the Russian Jew move of like, well, I'll run off to literally the Pale Settlement. You like, Prigozhin literally ran to the Pale Settlement. Like that's what Belarus is. Like,
yeah.
They all say that, right? Like, Belarus is.
Bella is white, pale, settlement, you know, like that. Yeah. That is another, that is, I think, a more satisfying narrative than like just he's a fucking retard. But it's kind of the results are the same, whether he's a retard or a Jew. You know, it's whatever. Has anyone asked RFK what his take is?
I think probably he thinks that I would assume that the Prigozhin got vaccinated and this drove him insane. Yeah.
Fucking retard F. Kennedy.
Anyway, I think that probably should do it for this late June, end of June 2023 update for Ukraine. Did you have anything else or?
No, we decided we weren't going to do a counteroffensive until anything happened in it, and nothing's happened in it.
Nothing
happened in this event. So, like, what the fuck are we even? Why did we make this episode? We've kind of broken from our.
It was weird as fuck. Like, it was just so surreal for about 22 hours, and there were some funny memes of like, you know, the boys, you know, cannot sleep because they're, just. Checking in on this situation was crazy, and it just kept getting crazier, and then it ended. So whatever, yeah, it's a very strange episode, but I think I would expect that within, I don't know, a couple months, that this, if not sooner, if not a lot sooner, that essentially that Ukraine would have ceded strategic initiative to Russia, and then we'll see. Late summer, early fall campaign from Russia. It'd be really vindicating if the mud did not stop them. That would be funny as shit.
Well, I mean, is there mud on the highway? No. So that's
right.
Not
yeah,
the big
right.
issue.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Anyway, we'll have to wait and see for that. In the meantime, thanks for listening, and take care, everybody.
All right.